My name is Paul Geiger. My age is 68 years, and today's date is August the 16th, 2012, and we are at Millennium Park in Chicago, Illinois. And I will be interviewing my wife.
Hi, my name is Christine Steyer. I am 44. Today is August the 16th, 2012, and we are in StoryCorps having a wonderful time. In Millennium Park, Chicago, Illinois.
All right. Now, tell us why you want to be here today and share this story. Why does it mean so much to you?
Well, there was a very powerful experience that happened to me in December of 2009. It lasted for about a week, and it really changed my life. It's got lots of pieces to it, kind of like all good stories. And I wanted to talk about it, and I'm going to try to explain it in the best way that I can. And I'm sorry, it was December 2008. Not December, for a week in December 2008. It has a little bit to do with serendipity, and it has a little bit to do with the idea that when the student is ready, the teacher will come.
Oh, don't keep us hanging. Who are you talking about?
And the story has several characters, and I was trying to figure out the best way to kind of wrap myself around all these bits of the story. So I think it's best to just introduce all the characters first, and then I will kind of delve into everything. So I'm one of the characters because I had the pleasure of experiencing this incredible gift that was given to me. And I am an opera singer. And the main person in the story is Beaumont Glass. And Beaumont was an opera coach, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. The other character is his lovely wife, Evangeline Noelle Glass. The fourth character is a very famous German soprano by the name of Lotte Lehmann, who Beaumont and Evangeline both had the pleasure of working with. And the final character is really not a real person, but it's a fictitious character. And her name is the Marschallin, and she's a character from Richard Strauss's great opera Der Rosenkavalier. And so I just wanted to say that we're going to be talking a little bit about all of these characters, and they are all parts of our story.
Well, how did you meet Beaumont and his wife?
Mm-hmm.
What were the circumstances?
I was singing in Austria about 6 years ago, and I met Beaumont and Evangeline, and they were coaching opera singers in Graz, and they lived in Maine, but they would go there for the summers and just pass on their immense knowledge to singers. And I had an incredible experience with them during that time. Beaumont was born, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. He was born in October the 25th, 1925. He was of a New England family, and ever since he was a little boy, he loved opera, and I guess when he was very young, he staged his first mini ring cycle in the backyard of his house. I think he was 3 or 4 years old with his cousin. To explain what an opera coach is, when one rehearses an opera role, for example, one will arrive and they will have to learn a role. And so we need to have someone that can help us learn it, help us pronounce things correctly, help us with the diction, because many operas are in foreign languages, help us make sure the rhythms and everything is exactly right and that our notes are accurate. And Beaumont was wonderful. He was very well trained, and one of the roles he specialized in was, or one of the operas he specialized in, was the opera Der Rosenkavalier by Richard Strauss. And what his job would be to do is when a singer came to him, he would play the piano part of the orchestral reduction. And what that means is when you go hear an opera, you hear an orchestra playing the score, maybe 60-piece, maybe 100-piece orchestra. A piano reduction is where they take all of the stuff in the orchestra and they condense it into a piano part. Because for rehearsals, you don't have the whole orchestra. You just have a pianist that basically has to play all of that. And the Rosenkavalier opera is one of the most difficult scores to play because it's very chromatic and the meters change, the rhythms change. It's all over the place. And so he was one of the great people that could actually do that. And at the same time, playing it so beautifully, he would then be able to coach the singer at the same time. And it would help the singer memorize the role. So you would just kind of practice it over and over again. And that's what his specialty was. He was head coach of Zurich Opera for a number of years.
Well, now, how is it that you came to do Rosenkavalier?
Asked to do that as a role. Someone had asked me to do that role. And since I had worked with him and his wife, I decided to call them to ask them to see if they thought that role was right for me. And they felt that it would be a good role for me. And I'll get into that a little bit more later. So I'm going to tell you some great stories about Beaumont, just to set him up. He was, and I think you were there, Paul, and you saw one of these things happen. We were both, in the opera The Crucible, Beaumont had come into town. Not only was he a wonderful accompanist and coach, he was also a director, and he directed us in a production of Robert Ward's The Crucible, an opera based on Arthur Miller's play. And there was a scene where, if you remember, the girls are supposed to be possessed in the courtroom. Didn't like the way we were possessed. And so he was 80-something at that point, and he got on his back like with the agility of a breakdancer, and he was flailing around on the ground.
Like a breakdancer at the age of 80, and I was wondering, how in the world could I do that?
He was very much, very determined to get us to act possessed. And another really funny example of him, he had so much life, such a great spirit, was that I was coaching something from the opera Giuditta with him and his lovely wife. And his wife didn't think I was sexy enough because I'm supposed to be, this dancer and move about the room. And she said, "You're not sexy enough. Beaumont, go show her how it's done." So there he is, takes my fan in the hand, and all of a sudden he's showing me how to walk the right way. And so he's just so full of life and had a wonderful sense of humor, too.
Oh, yes. Well, now, tell us a little bit about Beaumont's wife, Evangeline Noel Glass. I understand they were married for 54 years.
Well, you can't talk about Beaumont without talking about Evangeline, because they are really the yin and yang. They are the together and they are apart, but they are intertwined. And it was lovely to see such a loving relationship where all the energies were present. And it's really undescribable. I've never seen anything like it. It was so beautiful. And in fact, let me just add that when I found out that I was privileged to get this interview today, I did call Evangeline last night and tell her that we were going to be doing this, and she was very, very moved and told me a few other things that I did not know, and I will be adding them a little bit later in this interview. I have to, just to read it, I'm going to read something from a book that Beaumont wrote, and he's going to talk about Evangeline when he met her. Now, so Beaumont had just come out of the naval service, and
yes,
he got a job.
He was in the Naval Academy.
Yeah. And he got a job in California at Santa Barbara. It was called the Music Academy of the West, and he was playing for Lotta Lehmann, the great soprano, and he was the studio accompanist, which meant that he would accompany her when she was giving her lessons to the young aspiring opera singers, and he would coach with the singers, for part of the day. And so this is what he writes in his book about his meeting his wife. And he says, I guess he had had a little car accident. "A month after my car accident, I met my future wife. I was still on crutches, 4 front teeth were missing, and my jaw was wired shut. She was absolutely gorgeous, still is. And then the first thing I heard Evangeline sing, omen of things to come, was Grieg's I Love You. And then this is my favorite part here. I scheduled her coaching sessions as the last in the day so that I could have as much time with her as possible with no interruptions from other students arriving for their lessons. We worked on arias from Lohengrin and Tosca, then went for long strolls in the beautiful gardens that surrounded the Music Academy. We had met in January, became engaged in March, and were married in June. Our daughter Melody was born the following March.
Oh, my.
And you know what I'd like to do now? I would like to play something because I want you to understand Evangeline's sweet spirit, and she was so well named. She is talking a little bit about an aria that Lotte Lehmann gave her. She was a very nervous singer, apparently, when she first started singing, and Lotte Lehmann gave her this aria to free her up. I don't know this aria, but it's from Die Tote Augen, which means the dead eyes, and all of a sudden a woman is given her sight back in a mystical experience, and that aria freed Evangeline up. So I would love to play her just talking about that for a second.
So I learned it in English, and suddenly I've had something happened, something snapped, and my husband was there, and it was we couldn't believe it. My voice just blurted out gushed out like a waterfall, because before I was squeezing and choking and you know, very inhibited and holding back. And something burst in me, and I suddenly felt that I was this character and that I was living having this experience of being healed and opening my eyes and seeing the light. And then my voice responded. My voice just went up octaves, and it was big and beautiful and free, and I just felt like I was liberated, and it was the most unbelievable experience. It was a revelation, and she was so pleased, because Lotte Lehmann was so pleased because before I'd been, you know, a talent that she had wanted to nurture, but I hadn't been able to get past that barrier. And then suddenly it was like a big explosive moment where everything freed. And that's why I ever since have always tried, and not succeeding, but always trying when I actually did get in the opera world and sang in opera roles, to rekindle that beginning where I would have to. First, I tried to rely on inspiration, but that didn't always work because there were so many distractions.
So that's a little bit about Evangeline talking about studying with the marvelous teacher Lotte Lehmann, and only a great teacher could know the exact aria, the exact piece of music that somebody was to sing to free them up from a blockage.
I remember hearing her say that she was, when she first studied with Lotte Lehmann, she was so overwhelmed at being in her presence. She was just so overawed. She was like a deer in the headlights,
mm-hmm.
She said.
I'm going to read a little bit about the impression that Evangeline and Beaumont made to me when I met them for the very first time in Europe. Together as a team, they taught the great operatic repertoire. He, the detail man at the piano, making sure everything, diction, pronunciation, pitch, rhythm was perfect. And she, well, what she did was more difficult to describe. She would sit there perfectly still and silent, observing for the longest time. Then, as if she had been experiencing the essence of what the singer was struggling with, she would say something very deep and insightful. Unbeknownst to them, I had instantly adopted this couple as both my parents and my grandparents, as all the teachers I wish I had ever had and would ever have. And as I came to know them better over the years, I realized their uniqueness more fully. They had the incredible ability of lifting everyone up in a profession notorious for cutting everyone down. The student, whether talented or not, the fellow colleague, whether jealous or not, no one was ever left out of their sincere recognition.
Oh, yes, that's true. I experienced that myself with them. Well, tell us about Beaumont and your relationship to him. How was he as a coach? What did he do?
Well, this is really, I think, the the part of the story that I feel very connected to. This is the powerful experience I was talking about. But you know what? I want to give a little sense of him as a teacher too. So I'm going to have him. This was a recording we made. We had Easter dinner with them about 4 years ago, and we were working on some repertoire. And I love this song. It's by Hugo Wolf, and it's one of the Mignon, M-I-G-N-O-N, leader. And it's from a story by Goethe called William Meister's Apprenticeship. And this is such a lovely song about this little sweet-spirited girl who says the most profound things. And so many composers have said her poems. And I was working on it with Beaumont, and he's going to talk a little bit about the character, and then he's going to read the translation that he wrote of the song. And, you know, you can tell from the energy and the spirit of his voice just what a wonderful, wonderful teacher he was.
Well, Christine, you know the story. Mignon has had many traumatic experiences. She was stolen as a little child from a comfortable home in Italy by gypsies. And then she had a frightening journey across the Alps. And then she was mistreated and had to dance. And then when her freedom was bought by a young man, he couldn't go around traveling with a young girl, so she had to play the part of his page boy. And here we have her dressed in an angel costume. She has a premonition of her early death, and she says, "Don't make me take this costume off. Let me seem one till I be one. Don't take my angel dress away. I soon shall leave this earthly dwelling to go into a house of clay. I'll rest there for a while in quiet, then open wide my eyes anew and leave behind the snow-white costume, the girdle, and the lilies too. For there in heaven, no one asks you if you were man or woman here. You need no clothing. Human forms are transfigured in the spirit sphere. My life seemed simple on the surface, but pain enough I did endure. In grief I grew too old too early. Make me forever young and pure."
I would like to next talk about Beaumont's relationship to Lotte Lehmann, which is so crucial to our story. Beaumont, as I mentioned earlier, was Lotte Lehmann's studio accompanist. Now, Lehmann was one of the great German sopranos, and she had actually worked with Richard Strauss on his famous opera written in 1911, Der Rosenkavalier. She had started off singing the role of Sophie, the young girl. Then she had played the part of Octavian, who was the title character, and it was a pants role, meaning that it was a girl singing the part of a young boy. And then she sang the role of the Marshalin. And she was renowned for this role. And I'm going to read a little bit about Beaumont's experience when he was a young man working with her. She was an older lady at that point, and she would be giving these master classes. And this is what he said about her. "The greatest privilege of all was to see her reenact her world-famous Marshalin with 1,000 half-lights and nuances, a tear in one eye and a twinkle in the other, as Strauss had prescribed. Nothing that she ever did had the stale whiff of routine. Everything was freshly recreated out of her mind and heart and soul, no matter how often she had performed it during her long career. Her students made fun of me because I used to write down all her comments in my score. One day, they presented me with a huge pencil as a joke. But one of Lehmann's friends, who had dropped in for a visit, leaned over and whispered to me, 'Someday you'll be very glad that you profited from her wisdom and experience. Someday you'll write a book about it.' And 30 years later, that is exactly what I did. My biography of Lotte Lehmann was published in 1988 in celebration of her life." And one of the touching parts about all this is, and this I think leads us to our main story, is that when I called the Glasses and asked them if they thought the role was a good one for me to take at this point, they said, you can only take it if you come and work with us. So I was preparing to go to Maine to coach with them for a week on this role. And about a month before, Beaumont's lovely wife calls me and she said, well, we have some bad news. Beaumont's Big died diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, and he's deteriorating very, very fast, and we'd like you to get here as soon as possible. And it's really just struck me because, you know, illness and these things that happen to us in life are very difficult. But the choice that they made instead of canceling, which was to invite me to work with him during this, was very touching, and it proved to be a really life-changing experience.
Do you know when he had been diagnosed?
He had been diagnosed in about October of 2008. And I'm going to write what happened when I showed up at the airport. They picked me up. When they came to meet me at the airport, Beaumont, the elegant octogenarian I knew, approached me slowly with a cane. His chest collapsed. The fragile body, however, was dwarfed by his magnificent smile and determination. As we were exiting the parking garage, I noticed that he could barely turn his hand upward to receive change from the parking attendant. How could he play, I thought, the piano accompaniment to Rosenkavalier, one of the repertoire's most difficult scores. And I guess this is where sort of the serendipity comes in this story, because he did indeed sit down that day, and his lovely wife, they had a chair for him because he wasn't strong enough to sit on a piano bench. So they had a chair, and she put some pillows there, and he turned his hands over and played that piano, and it was unbelievable. All his life and all his training and all his beautiful spirit, it was as if grace had descended upon him at that moment. And his lovely, we worked for about 2 hours in the morning, then 2 hours in the afternoon, and then in the evening we would watch videos of the great Marshallins. And Evangeline was always in the room, you know, commenting and telling her how much she loved him every 5 minutes. It was really adorable.
Yes. Well, can you talk about the significance of Strauss's opera, Der Rosenkavalier, and the Marschallin? And how does she contrast or compare with the other opera heroines that you've played?
Well, the Marschallin was Beaumont's favorite character in all of opera, and Evangeline had actually sung the role, so they had so much insight into this. And like I read earlier, he had been there with Lotte Lehmann and had really mastered it, writing in all of her markings. And this proved to be wonderful because, you know, when the students made fun of him, he wrote in his score, oh, Lotte Lehmann took her fan at this moment, or she gestured here. He gave all that to me. It was all in that score from the 1950s. And it was the same score he played out of. And now it's in my score because he gave that to me, and I wrote them all in, and I did all those wonderful gestures. The Marschallin is a very interesting character, and I'll just be very brief on that. It's about a princess who lives in aristocracy in Austria in about the 1600s, and she is actually considered to be an older woman. She's 34 years old at a time when the life expectancy was about 40. And her conflict in this opera is that she has to deal with the process of aging. And it's a mystical experience for her. She wakes up one day, she's got a young lover, and certain things happen to her that this day is no longer the same day. And for the first time in her life, she looks outside of herself and decides to live the rest of her life deliberately accepting what is happening to her and to live with meaning and to set everything right in her world. And in a way, that's what Beaumont was doing. He was living by the same principles of he knew he was dying, and he decided to live the remainder of his life with dignity and to face everything that was going to be before him with elegance. And one of the interesting things about this character, because she contrasts so much with the other characters I had been playing. I had been playing like La Traviata, Violetta, and Man of Butterflies. And those are our characters, although they're separated by geography and time, they're both women who end up dying, one by suicide and one by consumption, pretty much because they love the wrong man too much, and a series of events happen, and they die at the end. It's almost like Romeo and Juliet, where, you know, it's such a tragedy because they didn't live long enough to ever have a fight or an argument. But the thing about the Marshalin that's so different is she doesn't die when things go wrong. She lives, and in a way, it's harder because she's not saying, I can't deal with this. She is dealing with it. And at the end of the opera, although her heart is breaking inside, she sets everything right. And there's this inner journey she goes on. And it's one of the most extraordinary moments in opera because her character started out as actually a minor character. When Hofmannsthal, the librettist, and Richard Strauss were beginning to, the composer, were putting this together, she was a very small character. And she almost took on a life of her own. Her part got bigger and bigger and bigger, and at the end of it, it's almost the character you leave remembering more than the title character, because she's the one that goes through this 15-minute transformation of the soul on stage, where she is discovering and confessing her innermost fears and saying the most profound things that I've ever heard.
And yet the opera is not a tragedy. It's a comedy.
It's a comedy. Is that right? Except for her. I'm going to read something very beautiful, and this is part of her self-discovery moment on stage. It's a very long scene, so I'm grabbing several sections of it, but this is what she says. Why is it that God, and this is translated from the German, why is it that God makes me see things with such clarity today? Why does he suddenly make me perceive the weakness of everything temporal? Sometimes I get up in the middle of the night and stop all the clocks. And yet, one must not be afraid of time either, for this too is a creation of the Father who has created all of us. All of this must be a great secret, and we are here to bear this mystery in this life, but it is in how we choose to bear it that makes all the difference. And it's that last line which really stuck with me, and that's really what separates her from all the other heroines. It is in how we choose to bear it that makes all the difference.
Yes. Well, how did the week go, and how did it end? And tell us about that. You say you started in the morning, you would do 2 hours in the morning, two in the afternoon, and then you would study videos and recordings mm-hmm. in the evening.
It was a wonderful week. It was overwhelming on a lot of levels, and it was just wonderful to be around them and to see Beaumont just keep plugging away. And he was so insistent. He never wanted to cut a minute of the rehearsals short. And Evangeline was kind of there while he was giving me the more practical aspects of the coaching. She would be just there, always sort of in the background watching. And one time she would just say something so beautifully profound, an observation. It was so beautiful to work on all those levels as an artist, the practical, the spiritual, the humanistic. And also, they're so lovely that they want you to give your own as an artist, so you feel like you are also making a contribution to your own spirit that wants to have its own say in all of mm-hmm. this. It was a lovely, lovely experience. It was difficult that last day. I was saying goodbye to them after this incredible week, and actually there was a very nice little store, and on my way to say goodbye to them, I picked up a 6-pack of like really fine German beer. It was like a medley where they were all different beers from Europe. And Beaumont, although he wasn't feeling all that well, he still liked to have a beer every day. And so I knew he would like that. It was very tough saying goodbye, and it made such an impression on me that I wrote this, and I'd like to read it. I had learned so many things during that week with the glasses, so many things beyond the notes in Strauss's score. I learned how a man who loved giving the gift of music so much, could transform his frail fingers into those of a virtuoso. And how his love for the character of the Marschallin would give him the strength to correct my German despite his many fits of coughing. I learned how a woman who loved her husband so much would do all that she could to help him play, just by placing the right pillow in the small of his back and by telling him she loved him every half an hour or so. I'd like to add that when I was saying my goodbyes to them, Evangeline thanked me. Of course, I thanked them profusely, but she thanked me and she said that the fact that I had come and that Beaumont knew that I was coming to work with him had given him an extra week of playing, and that I was his last coaching that day for his life, and that his life had come full circle because the opera Der Rosenkavalier was the first opera he had learned as a student, studio accompanist under the great Lothar Lehmann. And then I wrote this. And as I left their house for the last time, I was overwhelmed by the incredible dignity of this couple. Then, as if by grace, I found myself comforted by those lovely words of the Marschallin. It is in how we choose to bear life that makes all the difference. And as I said, I had the pleasure of talking to Beaumont's lovely wife last night, and there was a few things she shared with me that I didn't know. After that coaching, Beaumont went on to live 3 more years, which was incredible. And at some point, he did have to have a feeding tube and a breathing machine. But she told me he was still giving opera lectures. He was watching his beloved opera videos that he finally had the time to sit down and watch because he was a little bit less mobile. He also belonged to a Shakespeare club where they would read excerpts of Shakespeare plays in character, and he completed an opera libretto based on a Mark Twain short story called Love Spiel that actually had its debut. And 3 days before he died, he watched his favorite video of, I guess his favorite opera, which was Tristan and Isolde, with tenor René Kollo, and he had coached him in that role, so it meant a lot to him to watch that. Evangeline also told me something else which I thought was so beautiful. Before, when Beaumont was about to lose his motor abilities and was not going to be able to write anymore, he had at this point already lost his ability to speak, he asked for a pen and he wrote to her, "I am content." And she said he didn't write he was happy. He wrote he was content and accepting with graciousness everything around him.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Okay, so it's in, I would just like to say that he did die at home December 16th, 2011. And that was 3 years to the day that I said goodbye to him.
Hmm. 3 years to the day. My goodness. Well, do you have anything that you do to honor his memory?
One of the things that made such an impression on me was the fact that they made music so lovely to me. It was such a pleasure to work with them. It was a pleasure to experiment with your soul, to sing from your heart. There was never, if you did something that didn't quite work, there was never any demeaning quality to it. And it was so important to me during that period in my life to be around people that were great at what they did and encourage them human spirit through kindness. And we always see in our society so many of these modern shows where people feel like they have to insult people to get them to be able to get in touch with their emotions. And they did it through empowerment and honoring the person and honoring the craft. And it really changed my life. And it was shortly after that I started Bellissima Opera Outreach. We had a little group called Bellissima Opera, and we decided to add an outreach program to it. And I decided to bring this around to children and bring classical music to them right in their own schools, and to try to talk about the pieces with the love and the dignity that I felt that they deserved. Because to me, I believe that it is in the heart and souls of every person. Even if it's not maybe the music they like, I think they can identify with a beautiful poem. And I try as hard as I can to relate that beauty to the student's own life and to encourage them to find beauty, whether or not in our art form or in another one, to explore that part of life. And I feel like maybe that's my give back a little for the great gift that I was given. And I have to say one other thing. I'm an animal lover, and the next day when I came back off the plane, Paul, you remember this?
Oh, yes.
We had adopted a dog, and we went to pick him up the next day in a blizzard, and we ended up naming him Bo, B-E-A-U, after Beaumont. We're going to end with a recording. But before that, Paul, is there anything you'd like to say about, you've worked with them too. Was there something that touched you?
Well, I had heard his name, but the first time that I encountered his work was once when I went to a performance at the Cedar Rapids Symphony, and they were doing, I believe it was Rossini's Cenerentola, Cinderella. And the show, I know because I've done shows like this, was put together within 2 or 3 days. And I watched that thing, and I was just amazed. It had no right to be as good as it was. And the director was Beaumont Glass.
And it was wonderful.
And then I experienced him as a director. He, of course, he helped us out with our little Traviata, mm-hmm. and he directed us in The Crucible. And once again, it was an amazing thing to see the results that he could get with very little rehearsal time in many instances. It was very human. Yes.
I would like to end with something. Evangeline always told me to always end everything you do on a happy note. And I would like to end with a little excerpt of the performance, actually, that I did end up doing of Rosenkavalier. And this is the scene where the Marschallin has decided that she doesn't want to be involved with any of that stuff in her life that was negative. And she says, I'm going to do all these beautiful things today. I'm going to visit my old uncle. I'm going to go say a prayer. And she says this to say goodbye to her young lover once and for all. This is the finale of Act 1 from Rosenkavalier.